like to read about love stories. And a lot of people read novels to somehow learn a little bit about love stories between people. But I think the Bible's a better book. I think it's got a lot of great love stories in it. There's just lots of stories about marriages. Some are good, some are bad. I prefer the good ones. Like Amram and Jochebed. What a wonderful story. Raised Moses and Aaron and Miriam in the midst of a terrible time period. Or maybe Boaz and Ruth. What a story they have. What if you want to learn about a good woman or a good man, that would be a great study on marriage with Boaz and Ruth. They had Obed, who then had Jesse, who then bore David. So even David comes from the lineage of Boaz and Ruth. Or maybe about Zechariah and Elizabeth in the New Testament. They're a wonderful couple, blameless, upright, but they had to wait a long time for a child. But God gave them a child, John the Baptist, who was a wonderful blessing to the people of his day and to us. And then, of course, Mary and Joseph had their story to tell. That was a great marriage. They had the privilege of raising God's own son as he gave him into their hands to raise. Or we could study about Aquila and Priscilla, who, at least far as we know, had no children, but weren't they a blessing to the Lord and his church as they risked their necks for the gospel and did so much good in various cities where they went? All of these are great stories, and I wish that we could talk about them all. Admittedly, most of these couples, if not all of them, probably were married because of arranged marriages. That would probably have been more common in that period of time, in the Bible period. And that's good and bad. You know, on the good side of it, your parents are more mature. They would be better equipped to choose for their children. They're more objective. And they would have the best interest of their children in mind. But on the other hand, there's some downsides to that. I mean, not all the time is that the case. Sometimes there are parents who gave their children in marriage because of political reasons or social economic reasons, or because if you unite two families, you get more property. I mean, there's some downsides to that kind of thing, too. I wonder sometimes if Nabal and Abigail is in a story like that, because I can never figure what in the world Abigail was doing with Nabal. But maybe that was because of fixed marriage or arranged marriage. We don't have that situation in our culture. We get to make some choices. And that's good and bad, too. Can be bad if you enter marriage or the idea of establishing a relationship with your eyes closed and not being careful about your choices, unprepared. Or it can be good if you make preparations and you make wise choices. Either way, I think preparation for marriage is very important. So I want us to think a little bit this morning about choosing a mate. And we know that instances probably where somebody fails in life because of it, they didn't prepare. We may know some student who didn't get accepted into a college because he played around too much in high school and didn't get the grades necessary. Or maybe we know of an athlete that failed to win a race because he didn't train adequately and he ate too many Twinkies or something. He didn't do the right kind of training for that. Or we may know a man who didn't get a job because he was irresponsible. He was kind of lazy as he was growing up. So he wasn't dependable. He wasn't prepared when that job came along, and he wasn't ready for the work. And we know that there'll be some who will fail to even go to heaven because they don't prepare in this life to make themselves ready to meet the Lord in the next life. But what about marriage? You know, couples are prepared to spare no expense in finding in the most perfect building and that beautiful dress and the tuxedos and all the great the flowers to create that atmosphere. But that's the wedding. You can take that out. You can still have marriage. What about marriage? What about preparing for the relationship? I mean, that's certainly far more significant than the event that's involved in it. So I'm gonna suggest this morning four things that can be helpful, I think, when we're choosing or when we're preparing for marriage. There'd be several people in this audience, maybe quite a few people in this audience who are still looking at that possibility in the future, and you would be thinking along those lines. I want to give you three or four things to think about as you prepare for that part of your life. First of all, choose your spouse wisely. Should go without saying. And that means not according to appearance. Look, if you would, in 1 Samuel chapter 16, real quick with me. 1 Samuel 16, verse 1. Remember when God was choosing a king for Israel, he sent Samuel to the house of Jesse and to choose among the sons of Jesse for a king. The Lord said to Samuel, this is chapter 16, verse 1, "How long will you grieve over Saul since I have rejected him from being king over Israel? Fill your horn with oil and go, and I'll send you to Jesse the Bethlehemite, for I've selected a king for myself from among his sons." Drop down to verse 5, and let's read 5 through 7. Samuel and Jesse are together. He says, "In peace I've come to sacrifice to the Lord. Consecrate yourselves and come with me to the sacrifice." And he consecrated Jesse and his sons and invited them to the sacrifice. And it came about when they entered, he looked at Eliab and thought, "Surely the Lord's anointed is before him." But the Lord said to Samuel, "Do not look at his appearance or at his height of his stature, because I've rejected him. For God sees not as man sees. For man looks at the outward appearance, but God looks at the heart." So when Samuel looked at the sons of Jesse, he judged them by their outward appearances, by their outward qualities. Just like the people had judged Saul to be an acceptable king because he was head and shoulders above the rest. You know, it's very easy to be deceived by appearances, isn't it? Really easy. Especially when you're preparing and you're looking for a mate. He looks good. He's head and shoulders above the rest. He's well dressed, he's well educated, he has a deep voice, or all these things are very potent factors when we are looking for a mate. All of these things, though, are temporary at best, aren't they? Shallow in substance when it comes to somebody helping you go to heaven. And they don't last very long either. You may be good looking when you're first married, but usually it starts going downhill not too long after that. But we shouldn't look according, that shouldn't be the good big measure of how we get married. It should be not according to appearance, but it should be rather according to the heart. That's what God, when he chose a king for Israel, he said to Samuel, "Don't look at his appearance or at the height of his stature, because I've rejected him. For God sees not as man sees, for man looks at the outward appearance, but God looks at the heart." What is his heart like? That's the question. What is his heart like? What did God do with the ones that Samuel thought were impressive? He rejected them. Because they had a heart problem. Not because they didn't look impressive, but they had a heart problem. Why did God choose David? Because he's a man after my own heart. That's what God said in Acts chapter 7 and verse 13, chapter 13, verse 22. He's a man who will do my will. What's your security going to be? What is your security going to be in your relationship? Is it going to be because the person's good looking, the person's got a lot of talent, the person is got deep pockets, good investor? What is your security going to be? Is it going to be those type of things? Or is it going to be because he's got a heart to do God's will? A man after God's own heart. No one wants to end up in a bad situation. I think about, again, Abigail and Nabal, 1 Samuel 25. And I don't know how she ended up in that situation. We don't really have all the facts. Possibly an arranged marriage, but we know it had to, in the very least, be a miserable situation for her. No one wants to find out that their spouse is not the person that they thought they were. No one wants to marry a lemon. But there are some things that we can do. There are some ways that things that we can do to try to avoid ending up in a situation like that. And what I want to do is suggest that there are some questions that you can ask before you make that commitment that may help you when you're trying to decide if this is the right person for you. So I want to give you some questions that you can ask if you are younger and you're dating or in the midst of a courtship and you're trying to decide if this is the right person. Here's some simple questions that might say some things, give you some things to gauge things. Like, does he or she obey the law? That's a simple question. How about does he or she respect their parents? How do they talk about them or talk to them? Is she or he courteous and kind to those who help them? Does he or she prefer godly friends? These are good questions. You should ask yourself about the person that you have interest in as you decide whether they would be a good person to spend your life with. Does he or she treat you with honor and respect? How do they treat you? More questions you should ask. How does he or she spend their money? Do they spend it recklessly? Do they spend it carefully? Do they spend it with the Lord's interest in mind? How do they spend their money? What are his or her highest goals in terms of business? Are they interested in getting rich quick? Are they wanting to make sure they can be retiring by the time they're 30 years old? What is their objectives in their goals in terms of business? How does he or she act when they're playing sports? Do they behave themselves? Do they have good sportsmanlike conduct? How do they handle those kind of situations? What does she or he like to talk about? What things are of their interest when you're with them? What do they like to talk about? Would you want them to be the father or mother of your children? Think about that. Do you want this person to father your children or to be the mother of your children? There's three big questions I think that a person should ask when they're in the midst of this courtship or considering whether this person should be someone they want to spend their life with. They should say, what do your parents or grandparents think of him or her? Usually somebody older like that is going to have an opinion that's more objective than your own. They're certainly going to think more about your best interest maybe than you're thinking. What does your parents think? Would you ask your grandparents what their opinion is of the person that you're dating? What do your brothers and sisters in Christ think of him or her? Would you ask the people at church? Would you say, what's your impression of this person? I brought them three times now. What do you think about them? You think it's somebody I ought to stay with? Would you do that? Would you take their advice if they gave you advice? What position does God have in his or her heart? That's certainly got to be the top question of all. But sometimes those questions are hard to know, but you have a lot of other peripheral questions you can ask too to help you in making this kind of decision. Somebody might look at these questions and say, boy, with this kind of criteria, I'm never going to get married. You're going to fail on some of those things. Well, Jesus made a statement that was pretty shocking to the disciples in Matthew chapter 19 and verse 12. I'll read that to you. Matthew chapter 19 and verse 12. He had talked to them a little bit about marriage. At the end of that teaching, the disciples were just shocked. They said in verse 10, if the relationship of a man and his wife is like this, it's just better not to marry. They were overwhelmed by the kind of criteria that Jesus had given. And Jesus said in verse 11, not all men can accept this statement, but only those to whom it has been given. For there are eunuchs who were born that way from their mother's womb, and there were eunuchs who were made eunuchs by men, and there were also eunuchs who made themselves eunuchs for the sake of the kingdom of heaven. He who is able to accept this, let him accept it. So Jesus said, that's right. It may be better that you not get married. So somebody says, with this kind of rigid criteria, maybe I'll never get married. Well, maybe not. But we live in an age where there are really few people who are really concerned about going to heaven. I mean, there to find real, serious disciples who want to obey God more than anything else, it takes some work to find that. I'm not saying that people don't get married. I'm just saying only that you should take it very seriously, that once you make that decision, there's no going back. So choose wisely. Choose wisely. Now, the second point, I think you need to prepare for commitment. The Bible says in Genesis chapter 2 and verse 24, it says, leave and cleave. Leave your father and mother and cleave to your wife. Jesus said, what God has joined together, let no man separate. So when you prepare for marriage, you need to prepare for permanency. In our society, that's not a very popular thing. Marriages are falling apart all over the place. So people aren't going into them determined to make them last permanently. But that's the idea, that nothing can make you turn back. There is a story about a man in Cortez who was who asked for ships in order for him to do some expeditions to Veracruz, and he was given by the governor 11 ships. And this man took these 11 ships, and they when he arrived and at the he didn't tell the governor all the plans that he had. When he and his men anchored and disembarked from the ships, were on land, he sent somebody back and he said, "You burn all the ships. Burn all 11 ships." Why did he do that? Because he didn't know what was up in front. He didn't know what was ahead. You know how great the odds were going to be against them, to know what kind of enemies what they would face, to know what kind of conditions were in front of them. But there was one thing that everybody knew for sure. There was no going back. And we need to burn our ships. When you go into marriage, you burn your ships. There's no going back. This is the way, this is what we're making a choice, and we're going to go all the way through it regardless of what is in front of us. That's important, to burn your ships. God, marriage is a covenant. God calls it a covenant in Malachi. And he takes that covenant breaking very seriously. He said, "I hate divorce." That's what he said in Malachi 2 and verse 14. So, we need to be careful that we understand that this is a that we need to prepare for commitment. Now, there are various things in marriage that can test your commitment. We say for better or for worse when we make these vows, but we're kind of going in, when we go into it, we really don't know how challenging things can get. We know other people have problems in marriage, but sometimes we have the tendency to think that it's going to be easy for us to keep our vows. But I want to give you a commitment test. I want to give you a commitment test. All of these things that I'm about to present before you are not reasons for divorce. They're not grounds to break your commitment. But they're real things that happen to people. What things might test my commitment? How about your spouse turning out to be incompatible? Simply incompatible. Or maybe undergoes personality changes. They were one way when you married them, but they changed as time went on. Or they undergo serious character changes as time goes on. Or they neglect personal hygiene, gains weight, becomes sexually unattractive. Things change as you are in a marriage relationship. You marry a non-Christian, maybe. Maybe you're convinced that when you marry them, you can change them, but he reverts back to a worldly lifestyle. Not what you expected. Would that be a test of commitment? All of these things would be a test on one level or another. He or she changes his views about the Bible for worse. Now that person doesn't believe the Bible anymore. They did, but they don't anymore. You experience serious money problems. You have serious sexual problems. Your spouse begins using drugs or alcohol. Your spouse abuses you or your children through some disease or injury. Your spouse becomes an invalid. Maybe your spouse becomes mentally ill. These things happen. After marriage, you find you have disagreements about having children. How many we're going to have or how we're going to raise them. You thought you were on the same page before you married, but after you do, you find out there's disagreements. Your spouse fails to fulfill his or her role in the marriage relationship. He's not the leader that you thought he would be. Or she's not the person who is going to allow you to lead and submit to your lead like you maybe thought that she would. Your romance dies. The love grows cold. You grow apart. You struggle with that. Your mate abandons you, but you don't have solid proof it was adultery. When you look at these things, it's easy to think, these just couldn't happen to me. None of these things can happen to me. But they do happen. And none of those are scriptural grounds for divorce. I'm not saying these things to terrorize you, again, but to make us think more realistically. We think it can't happen, but it often does. My question is, does your idea of commitment encompass these kinds of things? The willingness to stay committed. If any of these things happen, you're obligated to keep your promise to have and to hold from this day forward, for better or for worse, for richer or for poorer, sickness and in health, to love and to cherish till death do we part. usually a minister doesn't read this list of possibilities in the middle of a wedding service. I've never heard them before. But we need to be thinking soberly about those things. So I want you to think about that as you prepare for marriage, prepare for commitment, to stay committed. There's another thing too. Prepare for your role as a husband or a wife. In Genesis chapter 1 and verse 27, there is a man and there is a woman. There are gender differences. And in 1 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 3, there are differences in the role of a man and a woman. Paul says, in the family, Paul says in chapter 11, verse 3, he said, but I want you to understand that Christ is the head over every man, and the man is the head of the woman, and God is the head of Christ. So you have a difference in roles in the marriage relationship. And that's very practical. God assigned the man responsibility to lead. He didn't choose that. He was given that responsibility, and he assigned the wife the responsibility to follow his lead. And preparation for that, our roles in marriage, really begins now. Not after we are married. If you have always been a woman, and maybe you're strong-willed and independent, then you may have to change that some, you know. Or if you're a man and you've never led, you've always kind of allowed yourself to be the one who was led, to be directed by others, you're going to have to learn how to lead. And God didn't give us the option to trade roles. That's not a biblical option. We have to assume the roles that God gave us. So that's a way we have to prepare for our role as husband or wife. Let me move on to my last point. The last one is that you need to prepare for intimacy. And that what that means is that you need to be pure now before you marry. 1 Timothy chapter 4, when Paul wrote to Timothy, he said, in verse 12, let no one look down on your youthfulness, but rather in speech and conduct, love, faith, and purity, show yourself an example of those who believe. Be pure now, before you're married. You know, think about your spouse is likely alive right now if you're preparing to marry. They're already alive. They're somewhere around. And you think about this yet. What is she doing right now, dear man? What is my spouse doing, my future spouse doing right now? Let's imagine. Let's imagine you go to Burger King. You're sitting in one of those little booths, and you look over the next booth, and you see the girl that you're going to marry sitting there. And she's with another guy. Now, you know that. She doesn't know you're there, but you're able, you got this special position. You can observe her. And she gets up and they start leaving. You think, I'm going to follow her tonight. I'm just going to see what kind of girl this is. And you follow her, and along the way, her and this guy start doing things they ought not do. And you say, hey, what are you doing? You shouldn't be doing that. You belong to me. You're going to be my wife. You're supposed to be pure. You know? And you wish that you want her to stop it because she's going to belong to you one day. I want somebody who is pure. Stop it. Now, let's trade that situation. What if you're at Burger King and you're with some girl? Well, let's switch that around. That's it, I guess. You're the guy and you're with Burger King, you're with this girl, and your future bride is sitting in the next booth and she's watching you. And she knows that you're going to be the person she's going to be married to, and she's thinking, I'm wondering what kind of person this is. And she decides, I'm going to follow you tonight. And you leave the Burger King with your girlfriend, and you go out and start doing things that are ungodly. And she's going, what are you doing? You belong to me. You're going to be my wife. What are you doing? You should be pure. I want a pure bride. See how it can work either way? And the point is, you need to be pure now. Because just like you want to marry somebody who is pure and faithful to you, they want the same thing. And so you need to prepare for intimacy and the relationship that will come to that now, beforehand. 2 Timothy chapter 3, verse 22, Paul said to Timothy, this man, young man, who was evidently not married yet. I'm sorry, I think I wrote down the wrong passage. Chapter 2, verse 22, 2 Timothy 2:22. He said, "Now flee from youthful lust, and pursue righteousness and faithfulness, love and peace with those who call on the Lord from a pure heart." I just want you to think about the idea of preparing now, preparing for it by choosing wisely, preparing for commitment and permanence, preparing for the role of being a husband or a mother or a wife or a mother, and the idea of prepare for intimacy before that time comes. Marriage is very serious, and and I don't think there's any other relationship, with the exception of your pledge of faithfulness to Christ, I don't think there's any other relationship that comes close to the significance of the marriage relationship. Do you want to be a Boaz and a Ruth when you marry? Would you like to have a marriage like them, or a marriage like Amram and Jochebed, who can raise a Moses and an Aaron and a Miriam in the midst of a difficult situation? Or do you like to be a Joseph and a Mary who are faithful so that when God puts into your hands the privilege to raise a child, that you could raise them up as they did our Lord faithfully and prepare that child for a service to God? We begin preparation for that now. Maybe you're still waiting and you're thinking, "Well, I sure wish it'd hurry up." Well, you may have to wait a little bit longer. Zechariah and Elizabeth waited till they were pretty old people. But God hadn't forgotten them. He had a plan, and it just was not time until He gave them John the Baptist. So you may have to wait. But God has a plan. You won't, and so we need to plan ahead. Preparation is important. You need to pray a lot. And if you're not a disciple of Jesus Christ, you need to make yourself a disciple of Jesus Christ. You need to come to Him. You know, this is kind of an invitation, I guess, for tonight, this morning. If you're preparing for marriage, the first thing you do is you need to get yourself right with the Lord. You need to come to Him and pledge your allegiance and your faithfulness to Him and begin walking according to His will. Because there's, first of all and foremost, without that relationship, we cannot have a hope of eternal life. But besides that, there may be a good girl out there who's looking for a good guy, but if you're not committed to the Lord and faithful and walking in His ways, she may not just pass you right by. Because there's people who are looking for faithful spouses, and we need to prepare for that in every way. Well, I hope that you'll give those things consideration, and they'll be helpful to you and your life of service to Christ and in every aspect. And this morning, if we could help you out in any way, whether you're wanting to make a commitment to Christ and be baptized, or just need the prayers of the congregation in some way, and we can help you out, let us know that by coming forward while we stand and we sing our song.